Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so on this podcast, I share ideas and strategies and blueprints. I tell stories about things that have worked, but also some of those big epic fails I've made along the way. I interview experts because I'm also on this journey as well. But ultimately, I believe that teachers play a profound role in helping students reach their creative potential. And so that's what we talk about. And today we're going to be talking about this idea of sprints, mini projects, and project-based learning. And I mention this because a lot of times what I've noticed is that there's sort of this attitude of like, it's got to be project-based learning, and if it's anything less than that, then it's not authentic, or it's not real, or it's not whatever. And I don't like that. I just don't agree with it. I think that there is a lot of power in doing creative projects that aren't full-blown PBL. Yes, we should have students doing deep dive project-based learning units where they really get into a topic and they launch it to an authentic audience, they build that empathy and all of those things. But what I'm gonna argue today is that there's a time and a place for other models, including shorter mini projects and also like single class period sprints. And I'm gonna start out with a story of where I went completely wrong on PBL. This would be the year. I would be a fully project-based social studies teacher. After reading every PBL book I could read and attending PBL sessions at a few summer conferences, I had a vision for a new way of teaching my subject. My third year of teaching would be the first year of an entirely project-based social studies curriculum. I had seen positive results in my previous year after doing a PBL unit each semester, and now I would build on that momentum with a new group of students. I began with our district curriculum map and set up a 5-week and 4-week long projects for each semester, so 2 projects per semester. As a social studies teacher, this felt pretty easy. I would chunk together standards by theme and time period, and then center the entire project around those standards. I started with larger driving standards and then added layers of connecting concept standards and embedding skill-based standards. I even added a column in my little planning document for the ELA standards my students would be using in their language arts class. I had this figured out. But halfway through our first project, I noticed students seemed confused. They struggled to make sense out of the subject, and they weren't seeing the connection between a particular skill they were using, in this case, reading maps, and the current project they were doing. A few of them needed some traditional time for practice. Some of them had significant misconceptions, and I rushed to clarify things. The project continued and students forgot about the map reading that they were supposed to have done. And as the project progressed, students were, well, kind of bored and restless. One student asked if we could take a day off from the project and just do a lecture and maybe a class discussion. But overall, the project seemed to work. As we moved into our second PBL, students seemed to lack the excitement of the previous year. This particular project seemed authentic and student-centered. It was challenging, but I'd built in key supports and scaffold. But a few weeks into the project, the students seemed tired. They had hit a place of project fatigue. Meanwhile, I noticed that students had a shallow understanding of the concepts and continued to struggle with some basic skills. This time it was analyzing primary and secondary sources. The final products were awesome, and the student engagement actually skyrocketed later on in the project. But still, they kept feeling irritated by the small tasks they had to do that seemed unrelated to the project in hand, but were definitely connected to the standards that I had to teach. At the close of the quarter, I went into fall break, and I second-guessed my decision to go fully project-based in my teaching. I realized that certain standards didn't fit well in the projects, and instead would work way better with direct instruction and repetition. I re-examined the standards and realized that the larger units didn't fit into two themes per quarter, but actually three or four. I had started with the model first, PBL, and tried to fit the standards into the model. Instead of starting with the standards and asking what model works best for these standards, my goal had been to create an authentic PBL experience, but I had accidentally created these little moments of artificial within it. I had rejected things like repetition and skill practice as being artificial, but failed to realize that authenticity is not about just doing projects. It's about connecting the learning to a relevant task, and sometimes that is repetition. In the next quarter, I redesigned the unit plans to have two mini projects, one larger PBL project, and a more traditional unit with some smaller sprints integrated into it. Looking back on this, there were certain things I know I did wrong. For example, I had failed to adequately assess PBL as an ongoing thing. Like I didn't embed enough peer assessment and self-assessment into it. I had failed to address certain standards in a great way. I didn't do enough direct instruction. But there was this other element, which is that I was trying to fit standards into PBL that actually didn't really fit project-based learning. See, there are certain standards that don't fit well in a PBL framework. It's not that these standards are less authentic or less real-world, it's just that they lend themselves better to other frameworks. In general, you can think about these as the standards that improve with repetition and daily practice. They're the ones that focus on discrete measurable skills. They require significant direct instruction and guided practice. And they tend to be individual endeavors, and project-based learning tends to be none of the above. In language arts, these standards might include reading fluency, blending, and phonics work. In math, they might involve math facts or basic computational understandings. They might be things like linear equations, which don't work well in a long project, but work well in a smaller, like single mini project. In social studies, this could involve discrete skills like studying maps. In art, PE, and music, these are often skill-based performance standards that simply require daily practice. And in these moments, a more traditional approach works best. And again, that's okay. It's not less authentic just because it's skill practiced. Still, most standards do align well with creative projects. Every subject has elements of iterative thinking and divergent thinking, problem solving, ideation, imagination, all of these creative elements. But even then, sometimes the answer isn't a full-scale PBL project. Sometimes the answer is something shorter and a little more abbreviated. So with that in mind, I want to share the three different approaches to doing creative projects. So for each one, I'm going to give a description, a time frame, some examples, when to implement the approach, models to consider, pros and cons. So just bear with me for a moment. So we start out with sprints. Sprints are shorter opportunities for creative work that often focus on one key area of the creative process. So they might do brainstorming or problem solving or rapid prototyping. And the time frame is typically 45 to 90 minutes. Some examples might be a divergent thinking challenge, a Wonder Day project, a STEM challenge, any kind of sprint that you do. Note that the sprint, you know, you might do something like a simple math challenge. An example would be to redesign baseball to make it faster. And so you give them the challenge of what could be done to make an MLB game last less than 2.5 hours. And students would then analyze a curation of baseball statistics before pitching their solutions in the form of a podcast. And notice, they're not doing a ton of research. They're doing some, and they're mostly focusing on analyzing data and then coming up with solutions and proving it with data. On the other hand, you might give them a rapid prototyping STEM challenge where you give them a set of materials, like maybe five different items, and you say, you need to brainstorm as many uses as you can with these items, and then you give them a challenge of design a toy and focus on rapid prototyping revision. So you start with brainstorming, prototype, revise, and then you play the games in the end, right? Two very different approaches. One is much more focused on this data analysis and presenting your findings. The other one is much more focused on this hands-on making. And they're both sprints, right? They're super short. When it comes to things like the Wonder Day project, students have, again, a very shortened time period. You're going to go through the entire Wonder Day project in a 90-minute period or a 60-minute period. They're going to ask a question, engage in research, and then share their findings in a blog post. And again, that's an example of a sprint. It's much, much shorter. And the audience for a sprint is going to be private, or it might stay within the class or the whole school, but it's not going to be shared with a big, broad audience. Now, the strengths of this approach is that it works quickly and can be adapted to a more traditional pedagogical framework. So if you have a more traditional unit plan, doing some sprints can be a great way to sort of amplify it and get students to think more creatively within a more traditional framework. And you can focus on a narrower part of the creative process, researching, prototyping, problem solving, whatever it may be. And this faster pace can really help them conquer some of their risk aversion, right? Because it's low risk, it's often not even graded, or it's just participation-based grade, it's super fast. They learn that it's okay to fail forward, and that's great. The challenge is that this really doesn't have an authentic context. The lack of revision time can lead to sprints that lack depth if you're not careful. And if there's no reflection, it can end up as a fun activity or a little more. So you really want to make sure that you have some kind of reflection built into it. It needs to have that deeper critical thinking. So that's a sprint. Again, 45 to 90 minutes. A mini project is a little bit different. These are shorter projects that encompass most of the elements of PBL. They typically last around a week and give students a flavor for PBL, but they're not the full-scale, larger PBL projects. These could be independent science experiments, tiny house projects, curiosity cast projects, where they do this like podcasting thing. It could be the Invent a Sport Challenge, whatever it may be. And here your standards are going to be a deeper dive into content standards. Sometimes you practice multiple skill-based standards within it. But the goal is that you're doing this shorter unit plan with a narrower focus. And a great time to do this would be sort of when it's the last week of a quarter, the first week of a quarter, in between two longer projects to kind of get a break and to cut down on that project fatigue. And that's when it's kind of a good time to implement this project. Now, when it comes to the models, a lot of times you're going to use similar models to project-based learning. You might do an inquiry-based model, a problem-based model, a design thinking model, engineering, scientific method, whatever it is, but you're going through the phases in these other models in a much faster pace. So you're not going to spend, 3 days doing research. You might spend 1 day doing research. And you might do a public or authentic audience, but you often still keep this, inside the classroom or private. So your audience is not going to have that bigger, authentic audience. Now, what's the upside of this? The strengths are that this approach encompasses many of the elements of PBL while sticking with a tighter schedule. Students experience less project fatigue while they work through each phase of the mini project, but there's still a depth involved and an opportunity for an authentic audience. Students learn the building blocks of PBL, but they don't have to go through a longer PBL experience. Now, the challenges are that mini projects can feel rushed, and students who fall behind during one phase can give up really easily. The lack of a longer revision time means certain projects sometimes kind of lack a depth that you're going for, that they would get in a longer, more open-ended PBL unit. But still, they work really well sometimes if you have those sort of standards that you don't have a lot of time to go through. You know, you have a tight curriculum map. Doing a 1 week or even a 3 day mini project can be a great solution here. And, you know, it might be that students practice simple machines and geometric shapes at a younger age by redesigning the school playground. And they're going to spend 1 week making their models, going through the process, doing research, but they're not going to do a deeper dive, you know, 3 week, 4 week, 5 week project. At some point, though, we do want to incorporate some level of project-based learning. And project-based learning is a pedagogical framework where students learn the content through the project. And that's the key thing, that they're learning it through the project. There's often student choice and design, student inquiry, doing self and peer assessments built into it. PBL Works defines the 7 project design elements: challenging problem or question, sustained inquiry, authenticity, student voice and choice, reflection, critique and revision, public product. And so, you know, this is where you're doing a big, longer PBL project. And when it comes to the time frame, you know, if a sprint is 45 minutes, if a mini project is 3 to 5 days, this is going to be anywhere from 3 to 9 weeks. It might be a history documentary project, a service learning project. It could be a genius hour project, an entrepreneurial design project. You know, there's a lot of different opportunities, a lot of different examples that you could probably think of. And what you're doing is a deep dive into the concept standards while also integrating multiple layers of skill-based standards, just doing it in a way that's authentic, doing it in a way where you would actually need it for the project. So if you're going to practice a skill, make sure that it's authentic. Make sure that it's relevant to the task at hand. Otherwise, just set aside some time to do that skill-based practice. So for example, we did language arts projects when I taught self-contained, but we also did 5-minute fluency, and we just never tried to tie fluency work into PBL. It just was a separate thing that we did, and that was okay. Now, when to implement these projects, I would argue longer unit plans with multiple concept or method standards that are related to each other, a clear connection between the content and an authentic context, and really, it requires time. And so the models are going to be similar. You might do engineering model, scientific method, design thinking, inquiry-based model, service learning model. But whatever it is, you're taking them through this deeper dive into the subject matter. And the key thing is that if the sprint is private and within the classroom, and the mini project is often, you know, contained to the classroom or the school, a project-based learning unit really requires an authentic audience. There's an emphasis on building student empathy. Now, the strengths is that this really does develop deeper learning. Students connect the learning to an authentic real-world context. On the other hand, it takes time. And the truth is, sometimes we really don't have the time for a deeper project-based learning unit. In the end, what I would argue is that all of these models are necessary. It's not that one is more authentic or real than the other. They all matter and they all work. So the key thing is figuring out when and where to use each of these 3 creative approaches with your students to take that creative process to the next level. Hey, thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Would you do me a favor? If you enjoy this podcast, would you leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or wherever you listen to it? Would you also tell a friend about it? You know, word of mouth is one of the best ways to let people know about this podcast. Again, thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day. and go out and make something awesome.